I've been giving some talks for caregivers through the work I do, and it's still a little odd to have the experience be so one way. So you'll have to bear with me. But it's lovely to see all your faces, and it's really nice to be back with you again. I was in getting ready to come tonight. It was really impossible to separate, the circumstances that force us to come together in this virtual realm. And, I really recognize that so many of us are dealing with really challenging circumstances. Many of us are dealing with extreme isolation and quite possibly financial challenges, feeling separated from our loved ones. A lot of us are dealing with, I'm sure, anxiety around, getting this virus. So it feels like a time of really intense suffering, more so than usual. And so I hope that what I have to offer tonight supports you in some small way as you deal with this in this difficult time. I think last time I was with you, I was joking about how each time I've joined you, I've talked about something related to death, dying, or loss. And I was laughing that it's really quite remarkable that you keep inviting me back, because I fear I'm the ultimate downer. But in fact, while, that is the work that I've done in my life for so long, the hospice work, tonight I'm going to talk about something a little different, but something near and dear to me that has really supported me in this time. And so my talk tonight is going to be on this idea of living by intention, okay? So living by intention. So to find my way into my talk, I want to offer just a couple things. One is a poem from the Zen teacher Dainin Katagiri Roshi. And Katagiri Roshi was one of the big founding teachers of Zen Buddhism in the U.S. Some of you are familiar, I'm sure, but he created the Minnesota Zen Center in Minneapolis. And a few weeks before his death, he wrote a poem that I'd like to share with you. He wrote, "Living in vow, silently sitting, 63 years, plum blossoms begin to bloom. The jeweled mirror reflects truth as it is. Living in vow, silently sitting, 63 years, plum blossoms begin to bloom. The jeweled mirror reflects truth as it is." So I've read enough about Katagiri Roshi to know that this living by vow was an extremely important approach of his. And he really viewed every action that he would take in his life as an expression of his vows. And so I think in this poem, it's fair to assume that he was pointing towards the bodhisattva vow, this way of living to help all beings. And so this was really his training, his approach. I also wanted to share with you one of the, what's called Lojong slogans from a 12th century Tibetan text on training the mind. And this particular slogan refers to or reads as, all activities should be done with one intention. All activities should be done with one intention. And this intention is to wake up to our true nature, to recognize that we are all connected, we are all in this together, and to open to this reality, to open our heart to this present moment experience, even when there is suffering. So in my daily practice, I recite the four bodhisattva vows after meditating. And I'll just read these aloud to remind us. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Okay. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. And Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. Now, that's the translation that's used at the San Francisco Zen Center where I practice. But I have to say that there's another translation that comes from the Upaya Zen Center that my wife and I actually prefer. So, creations are numberless, I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to transform them. Reality is boundless, I vow to perceive it. And the awakened way is unsurpassable, I vow to embody it. So these vows, they really keep me on track in my practice, I would say, keep me true to my practice. And so we recite these daily. And, you know, it occurs to me that, you know, vows are around us constantly, daily. We only need to, you know, look at the screen and see this sangha to be reminded. You know the history definitely better than I do, but my understanding is that in 1998, the Marin Sangha was created. And so, you know, what was the vow that gave rise to this beautiful sangha that meets weekly? What was the vow that inspired you to simply attend this evening, to sit together? What was the vow that created this computer that you're actually attending the session through, right? So anywhere we look, these vows exist. This way of looking forward and committing ourselves to something for the greater good. So I often am in awe of, you know, these human brains of ours that, unlike the four-leggeds, unlike the animals, you know, we can actually look out into the future and think about who is the person that we would like to become. And we can set our intentions toward becoming that person. I find this quite wonderful and quite remarkable. We can set ourselves these goals in the short term and in the long term. So before I get further in, I want to invite you to engage in a short activity with me. So this will be about anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes. So once again, if it's comfortable for you, just, you know, find your seat in your chair and just allow yourself to close your eyes if you like. and just simply begin to notice the sensation of your hands, your feet. Notice the contact of your body with the surface that you're sitting upon that's supporting you. Just allow your attention to fall back into the breath, the body, the present moment. Attune into all the sensations in the body. And for a moment or two, let yourself rest in the in-breath and the out-breath, perhaps counting each breath on the exhale. Perhaps labeling, inhale, exhale. Just noticing that stillness and quiet that comes when we simply follow the breath. And now just consider if anything were possible, what would you really love to find in your life? If anything were possible, what would you really love to find in your life? And really let yourself imagine your highest aspirations. No need to hold back. If anything were possible, how would you really love to develop as a human being? How would you really love to develop as a human being? If anything were possible, what would you really love to offer the world? If anything were possible, what would you really love to offer the world? What would you really love to find in your life? How would you really love to develop as a human being? And what would you really love to offer the world or your community? So once again, let yourself open your eyes. So I love these questions. These days I'm teaching classes on cultivating compassion, and this is something that we offer to allow people to engage in what's known as values affirmation, to have an opportunity to really recognize, remind oneself of our values. What are our values that guide us in this lifetime? How often do we give ourselves the opportunity to step back and think of these things? How do we want to show up? What do we really want out of this lifetime? How do we want to give back? And it's been interesting to see how in some of the research around values affirmation and using these questions, we begin to see that the same parts of the brain are stimulated when we engage in this kind of inquiry. The same part of the brain that's stimulated when we recognize or think of someone who supports us, right? So when we think of a family member or friend who we know cares for us and supports us, certain part of the brain is stimulated, the same part that's stimulated when we engage in this kind of internal inquiry, the same reward system. So we also find that when we remind ourselves of our personal values, that this actually increases our self-compassion and compassion for others. We begin to feel greater capacity to show up for others more fully. And our self-compassion, when we experience it, actually inspires us into self-transcendent or pro-social actions out in the world. So it increases our inclination to support and serve, or to save all beings, as we say in the vow, or to free all creations. So this way of nurturing ourselves is, it actually increases our joy and makes us feel good about who we are. And we tend to be more generous when we engage in these kinds of activities. And so this values affirmation relates very directly, I believe, to this idea of living by intention, okay? So being able to clarify how we want to show up. And so in my experience, and I imagine for many of you, you have found that living your values just makes you happier, right? It makes you feel more joy and satisfaction in the world. And as I shared through the meditation, you know, each breath, each moment is an opportunity to really begin again, to live our values and to express our values, to support ourselves and to support others around us. All right, so I think one of the barriers that we face when it comes to living our values, to realizing our vows, if you will, is that we often feel like the little bit that I have to offer isn't going to make any difference in the world. The need is so great. So these days, we only need to turn on the news or pick up the newspaper to see the extent and the intensity of the suffering around us. And many of us are stuck in our homes, and it's very easy to feel like nothing I do is going to make any difference given the enormity of the suffering around us. And this certainly is a huge barrier. In thinking about my talk tonight, I was reminded of a favorite story from the South American indigenous tradition about this little hummingbird living in this forest with other creatures. And there's a fire in the forest, and this hummingbird flies off to this lake, and in its tiny little beak, it picks up a drop of water, and it flies back over the fire and drops this small amount of water onto the fire. And the hummingbird flies back and forth, and the other animals see the hummingbird doing this, and the animals start to ask the hummingbird, "What are you doing? You're too small. It's not going to make any difference." And the hummingbird knows who she is, and she says, "Well, I have to do something, so this is what I'll do." And so it's such a lovely reminder of even the smallest actions we can trust have some impact. And even without being attached to the outcome or the impact, you know, we make these small gestures because it is who we are. It's the way we live our vows, live our intentions. So that jeweled mirror that Katagiri Roshi writes about in his poem reflects back to us our true nature, the truth of who we are, and we do what we can with what we have, no matter our strength or abilities. No gesture of kindness or support is too small. And so in our practice, we work with dropping the story, right? So as soon as we begin to create a story that there's nothing positive that's going to come from the small gesture I can make, we can drop that and just be with things as they are and do what we can do. We can be kind to others, to ourselves, and trust that it makes a difference. And for those of us who are isolated, you know, I would venture that even taking really good care of ourselves, not just the physical body, but really staying true to our practice, is a gesture towards helping others. Because if we can stay strong and healthy, it actually is quite a relief to family, to those who worry about us. And when this passes and we can all be together again, we'll be there in good shape to really help others and make an impact directly. I heard someone speak out loud as we were beginning that she misses the hugs, right? So I have this vision, and some emotion comes up for me as I say this, but, you know, there's going to be this time that each of us in our own way will begin to venture back into that kind of human contact. We'll invite hugs, we'll offer hugs, and we can show up fully in that way. So I would say vows inform our intentions, right? So I think of vows as, for those of you who have spend some time in the backcountry in the mountains like I have, you'll be able to relate to this metaphor. But I think of vows as being like the mountaintop, like that's where I want to go. And intentions being more like the intermediate objectives, right? So I know if I'm going to get to that mountain, I need to get myself to that tree and then from that tree to that outcrop and make my way, right? So this is the way I think of this relationship. Our intentions keep us from getting lost on the way to fulfilling our vows. And if we can stay true to our intentions, we'll get to that mountaintop sooner or later. And so while it strikes me that vows are bigger in terms of scope and time, intentions are more immediate. And obviously both are aspirational. They both invite us to imagine our biggest self, to imagine our essential nature as being part of something bigger than just our self-centered focus and activities. And these intentions help us attune to our essential connection to all beings. So from my previous talks, you may remember that I do this other work in my life, which is I'm a what's known as a wilderness rites of passage guide. And since most of you are living in Marin, I'll trust that you know what I'm talking about when I speak of this practice of, sometimes it's called a vision quest, but in my practice, I call it vision fast. And so I take people out typically to the desert and I support them to be out on their own for a number of days, typically 4 days, 4 nights, with nothing but water and a very minimum of comforts, like a sleeping bag, a tarp, that sort of thing. So as you can imagine, to support someone who's going to be by themselves for that period of time with no food, we recognize that a lot of suffering is going to come up. So it's a real opportunity to look at our lives, look back in our lives, and ideally make peace with who we've been and really stand on that razor's edge of who I have been and who I will become. And because of the intense suffering that can take place, the intense emotional experience that one can encounter, we want to make sure that someone is carrying out with them, so to speak, a really clear and really solid intention for themselves. So leading up to the threshold circle to send them out, we're working with them to clarify an intention for themselves. So that when they start to really suffer and get uncomfortable, and it may not be the hunger, it may be, you know, the emotions of fear, regret, guilt, whatever it is, we want them to be able to depend on an intention that will remind them why they decided to put themselves in the situation, why they decided that they would open themselves to suffering in this way. And when I fast, I really depend on that intention quite a lot to keep me out there and to keep me true to the purpose of being there. And the intention reminds me of how I want to show up in the face of such intense suffering. And so given that each of us has really stepped out of this path of practice through our meditation and through our study of the Dharma, each of us knows the particular causes and conditions of our own personal suffering. You know, we all suffer. It may look different to each of us, and we know. And we know what it means to really pay attention to our own suffering. And so I have found it really useful to set an intention around how I would like to meet my own suffering, whatever the circumstances. I tend to have a really fierce inner critic, and I'm probably not alone in this group tonight. It's probably true for some of you as well. And so I've learned how to deal with that inner critic by setting an intention for myself that when I begin to hear that voice of doubt, that voice of inadequacy, I know to not listen to that voice and just keep moving through. Yeah. So this has been a really useful intention for me. And it has helped me arrive at a place where I can do something like this and be with you, you know, tonight. So I think for many of us, a lot of our suffering comes from, you know, resistance that we experience. And we can set an intention to trust the value of engaging when resistance arises, to trust the mystery of not knowing when resistance comes up for us. So we don't need to know what the outcome is going to be, but we can just stay with it and stay engaged in the activity that we're taken on, that we've taken on. So it seems to me that when it comes to our suffering, what really helps is self-compassion. And I know for some of us, it can be really difficult to express compassion to oneself. And so what I have found is that if we can't truly experience self-compassion, we may be able to at least set an intention for ourselves for self-compassion. And that intention alone may help us break through the barrier of that keeps us from treating ourselves as we would treat a close friend, right? So, and there's a subtle difference, I think, about truly being able to experience self-compassion and setting an intention for self-compassion. So I think the setting of the intention really acknowledges how difficult it may be for us, but nonetheless, we can hold that possibility. So as I say in the meditation, each moment is an opportunity to begin again, even when we fail. So without attachment to outcome or results, we simply can begin again. So in my morning meditation with my wife, after we meditate and dedicate the merit and recite the vows, we'll ask each other, what is your intention for today? And it's become this beautiful ritual, this beautiful inquiry to just simply witness each other and support each other to be the person we want to be on that particular day. This morning, my intention was to trust the fullness of whatever I have to offer, to trust the fullness of whatever I have to offer. And as I sit here yammering away at you and not really knowing how this is landing, that intention serves me really well, to just simply trust, you know. And tomorrow morning after meditation, my intention will be something else. And we'll see how that one goes. So in each moment, we're beginning again. And what I love about intention is that even if yesterday I had no trust in whatever I have to offer, today I start over and I try again. So I want to share with you one of my favorite poems. And this is Rilke's I Love the Dark Hours. And in the second half of this poem, Rilke writes of giving life to the dreams of the one we were, the one who is becoming. So let me share the poem. I love the dark hours of my being. My mind deepens into them. There I can find, as in old letters, the days of my life already lived and held like a legend and understood. Then the knowing comes. I can open to another life that's wide and timeless. I can open to another life that's wide and timeless. So I am sometimes like a tree rustling over a grave site and making real the dream of the one its living roots embrace. A dream once lost among sorrows and songs. So this beautiful image of a tree growing up over this grave and giving life to the dreams of the one its roots embrace. So our intentions offer this glimpse into our dreams, the dreams of who we want to become. And it's never too late. We are always becoming. We're always beginning again. So we work a lot with intention at Zen Caregiving Project, or as you know it, I imagine Zen Hospice Project. We will often ask our new volunteers, what is your intention in service? And we'll have people write down their intention on an index card. And so I've taken on that practice and the other kinds of work and teaching that I do. And it's not uncommon for me when I'm looking for masking tape or some old business card, something or another, to open up a drawer and find these index cards of intentions that I've written for myself. So I find that the most useful intention is one that is very succinct and to the point and realistic. In the work I do with caregivers, we invite them to step back and look at how they're doing with self-care. And we'll invite them to write a self-care intention for themselves. And it's extremely important that they make it simple and realistic. Even though I think it's true that like precepts, intentions are made to be broken. They're not rules. They're not commandments. They're really, after all, an opportunity to practice self-compassion. So I don't think it makes much sense for us to beat ourselves up when we're not fully living into an intention we set for ourselves. So I'll share with you another of the Lojong slogans. Correct all wrongs with one intention. Correct all wrongs with one intention. So we're all human. We fail. We make mistakes. And we just pick it up where we dropped it. And that's just the nature of things. So I think it's really important to be kind to ourselves when we drop that thread of intention. It's quite natural. In fact, you know, I find intention to be a lot like the breath in meditation, right? So this crazy, distractible mind just simply gets distracted. We know that's true. It's going to happen. And so when we notice that distraction, we just simply come back to the breath. And I think intentions like that. I may set an intention in the morning and I may move pretty far from it. And then when I remember the intention, I come back to it. And I just keep coming back. So I think in this way, intention serves to cultivate what's known as meta-awareness, you know, this ability to kind of step back and be the observer of ourself that we cultivate in our practice, right? So to be able to notice how we're doing. I have found that having an intention witnessed is quite a powerful practice. In fact, I encourage you to use the chat feature, or when we, in a few moments, when I open it up to questions and comments, if there's a particular intention you would like to have witnessed by the Sangha, please share it. You know, it's not for any of us to hold you accountable, but we can hold you in the setting of the intention. And it's nice to have it witnessed, know that someone else out there has an awareness. So speaking of our meditation practice, intention can be quite useful. When we began the meditation tonight, I invited you to consider an intention for your meditation. And so I have found that this can be quite useful. So how are you doing in your practice these days? And is there anything in particular you'd like to strengthen in your practice? So how do you want to show up? So we can use intention in this way. So again, you know, we're living in an extremely difficult time right now. And we're suffering and we're seeing so many people out there suffering. And so, you know, it really brings up this question for me anyways. How do I want to meet this moment? Who is the Roy I want to be in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic? What are the things that I can do to not just support my immediate family, but even the stranger on the street? Even though my face may be covered from a mask, can I at least smile and make eye contact, right? So how do I want to show up? Do I want to respond from a place of fear and avoidance? Or can I find my own way of engaging? And so this practice of setting intention feels particularly important to me right now. I find that I have a lot of resistance to picking up the phone and calling and checking in on friends. And so an intention I've been carrying is to really get curious about that resistance. Why is that so? And yesterday I connected with a dear elder friend of mine, and it was just a delightful conversation, and we really supported each other. It was beautiful, and I was so happy that I was able to push through and just pick up the phone. So what is your intention for this period? So I imagine many of you have used this practice yourself. And if it's been a while, I hope this is an encouragement to pick it up again. And if this kind of intention setting practice is not so familiar to you, I encourage you to try it. Maybe take it on as a thought experiment. And it can be really helpful to, maybe there's a buddy in the Sangha, and when you wake up in the morning, first thing when you get on email is send your intention and they can hold it for you. So don't believe me, try it, little thought experiment anyways. So I'd like to end with a poem. And this one's from David White, and the title is Cleave, and it was new to me, but maybe you know this one. To hold together and to split apart at one and the same time, like the shock of being born, breathing in this world while lamenting for the one we've left. No one needs to tell us we are already on our onward way. No one has to remind us of our everyday and intimate embrace with disappearance. We were born saying goodbye to what we love. We were born in a beautiful reluctance to be here, not quite ready to breathe in this new world. We are here, and we are almost not. We are present while still not wanting to admit we have arrived. Not quite arrived in our minds, yet always arriving in the body, always growing older, while trying to grow younger, always in the act of catching up, of saying hello or saying goodbye, finding strangely in each new and imagined future the still lived memory of our precious life. So that from David White. And now, with Bill's help, I want to invite any questions or comments. So I would just offer a couple perhaps guiding questions if you need them. What has been your experience with intention setting? Is there an intention you would like witnessed? What roles have vows or intention played in your practice? Or how are you doing these days? So we have a few minutes. We won't go too long, but I just would love to hear from anyone who has anything they'd like to share. Shia, was that you raising your hand or just adjusting? If you have anything you want to share, you could just do this and then maybe Bill can take you off mute.
And you also have to unmute yourself or let me know so I know to unmute you.
Please, Vita.
I just want to say thank you. I just want to say thank you. Just very meaningful. Very thank you.
Thank you, Vita. And Lise. Lise, can you take yourself off mute? Try that.
There
you
go.
There you go.
Thank you. I also want to say thank you, and that I really liked what you said about trusting your fullness, because what really moved me the most when I'm listening to someone and that I felt so much with you was your presence, and it just really helped me feel deeper into myself, and that was just so much of a pleasure. So to be in that kind of deep resonant stillness, and I found myself not even always tracking what you were saying, although that was my intention to stay with you, but sometimes the words just didn't matter. I mean, I start out tracking you at the beginning, and then I sort of just got lost in. So thank you. That's really the most of what I wanted to say. Thank you,
Lise. Thank you. And there's Patty. Patty, can you take yourself off mute? Try that first. There you go. You're off.
Sure. Again, I'll join the chorus of thank yous, but I'd also like to share an intention.
Please.
I'd like to try to focus on equanimity, because I bounce between being totally freaked out when I hear scary news and shutting down when I don't want to even confront what's happening. Yeah. I'm looking for a middle way that's, in my mind, it's equanimity. And the practice that helps me the most is the thought that with this breath, I'm okay.
Nice.
I tell myself with every breath, in this breath, you have everything you need. Everything is perfect. You only have to exhale and inhale one time. And if I can remember that with each breath, I'm okay, I can orient myself toward equanimity. So that's my intention, is to try to find equanimity in the middle of the fear and the chaos that sort of swirls around. Thank you for witnessing my intention.
Beautiful. May it be so.
Hi.
Hello.
It's Mary.
Hey, Mary.
I used to, and I still do sometimes intentions, but I really like how you clarified it. I remember just thinking about the intention of being kind. And then my daily question, my moment-to-moment question, Roy, was, what would be kind in this moment? Because, and I didn't always know.
Yeah.
I just didn't always know. And so that is kind of like, it kind of ties into what Patty said. A lot of it is just receiving the moment with kindness, whatever's there.
Mm-hmm.
And finding a way to accept it all.
Yeah.
It's like this. And to just let it be there. And then if I can do that with a certain kindness, then perhaps I can move a little more skillfully.
Yeah.
And that would be the way to find out what it means to be kind.
Beautiful.
So that's my intention.
Nice.
It's to accept each moment with an open heart as best as I'm able. Thank you.
Nice. Maybe so. Thank you, Mary.
Well,
I have a smaller chunk of that intention. I think that's a beautiful intention, that kindness. But I found it's sort of like with COVID, I've had to form this other intention, which is if I'm out on the street and I'm around people, I sort of automatically see them as disease vectors. And I have to intend to see them as fellow humans and have a warm thought and sometimes do meta just to remember not to be in this war-like situation any more than absolutely necessary.
Right. Yeah, thank you for that honesty. I know that's come up for me as well. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. All right. Well, going. Anyone else?